Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and we're going to talk again about evolution. Some people call it unfoldment. Some people call it emergence. And we're going to talk about the themes of evolution and the changing themes of evolution. And some people call that memes of evolution. A meme and a theme. I tend to put them both together. And a meme is a way of looking at the understanding of nature in each period of evolution. What is the theme of that period of evolution, and how is it changing, and how are we moving forward? And we're going to focus on economics. It's amazing how economics are so powerful in our society today. It's not just something that we live with and move around with. It's actually tearing us apart in so many ways. And to help us understand the way that we've evolved to this place and how economics has become so out of control, seemingly, at this point, and where can it even go next, is the author of a wonderful book that I've truly loved, and it's helped me understand this whole process so much better. And it's called Memonomics. Or Memenomics, I'm not sure how to pronounce it correctly. I like the name a lot. It's the next generation economic system is what this is about. How are we moving forward? And we're talking today with the author of this book, Saeed Dolabani. Welcome, Saeed.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you could be on. How do we pronounce the name of the book?
Memenomics.
Okay. For people who don't know the word meme, they would think it's Memenomics.
Yeah, it's Memenomics. So it's the economics as they're interpreted through memes, through cultural memes.
Right. And often we can use the word themes, because a meme is the theme of a particular economic or cultural place in life, in evolution.
Yes, absolutely. What we do, Peter, in the value systems framework is we take memes to the next level. So as everybody knows, memes are units of cultural DNA. You know, today all you have to say when you're explaining a meme is the ability of something to go viral. So if it goes viral like a YouTube video, if it goes viral like a fad, it is a meme. So what we do in the value systems approach is we, as I said, take memes to the next level and really shape them into what we call general category memes. So to use the example of YouTube, YouTube is a segment of a general category meme called media.
Right.
Okay. Media sort of in a cultural context picks its own philosophy, its own values, its own these general category memes, align together to form what we call a value meme, and a value meme is pretty much what defines a culture.
Right, and what's special about the work that you do is you interpret culture in relationship to economics, and economists aren't looking at society and what their needs are and how they're speaking and expressing themselves. They're looking at their own self-interest of money and of power.
Absolutely, Peter, and that is the sad reality of the state of the world today, is that economists still operate in silos and only look at what my client wants for the next quarter, for the next year, how do I impress the next political system? Very short term, very focused on algorithms and metrics instead of society as a whole. And that's where, the work like the subject that I discuss in my book come in to really inform the next system values that this narrow perspective, which is really proprietary to the fifth level of values, when we have a total of eight progressively conscious levels of value, are defining what the world should look like. And, you know, there's a scientific framework that says this is not the only place that we should make decisions for the entire world. There are higher levels of consciousness that determine what economics, what the purpose of economics should be. And that's really what my book does. It sort of gives us a historic perspective on the values that have evolved so far and what the trajectory of the future is going to look like.
Well, I don't know that we can project the trajectory of the future without understanding where we came from, so we have that perspective. And it's really important, and your book is so beautifully done, to understand how we got here from there and what happened, what we thought we were doing right in those days, the early days. And we go back to, I mean, you take it all the way back, and of course the whole study of evolution goes back to the beginning of humankind and comes forward, and yet we're mostly concerned about the last century.
You know, the framework that we use, Peter, is called the theory, the levels of human existence, which is quite a comprehensive theory that's been that was pioneered over 4 decades ago by a professor at Union College in New York called Claire Graves, Graves posited that that the human experience is an endless journey marked by a progressive levels of psychological developments that emerge to higher levels of values as we solve the problems of existence at a given level of societal development.
Of consciousness at that point.
Absolutely. So, you know, consciousness to the caveman means completely something different to the consciousness of, you know, people like you and me. It is a progressive process that once we solve the problems of existence at the caveman level, at the survival values, we emerge to another set of levels. And once we solve that set of problems, we move to a higher level of existence that has its own set of unique problems. And as we solve those, we move on to higher levels and so forth.
Well, one of the problems is that the whole world isn't doing all these levels at the same time.
Right. And this is what I talk about in my book, or the last part of my book, the last five chapters, focuses on how do we integrate these competing values through a big picture view that is more integral and focuses on the development of people in different value levels. We have people here in the United States that are in that survivalistic level, you know, a level that was predominant in the world 700-800 years ago, maybe thousands of years ago. We have that today. We also have, you know, people like Bill Gates and John Mackey, who are in that seventh and eighth level. So how do people in that seventh and eighth level design a new system that harnesses the experience and knowledge of the lower systems and plugs them onto a functional platform to serve the economic needs of the entire world, or the entire system?
It's as you say in the book, it's an expanded whole mind capacity.
Absolutely.
And so it takes advanced thinking to be able to appreciate all the different limitations that are going on out there at the same time on so many levels. And in this world, there are cultures that still have to go through fourth and fifth levels. They're back in second and third levels. And we know that they can't leapfrog.
Right. Now, the system posits the necessity of development through every stage, Peter. So what we're experiencing in the States today is a transition from the fifth level system, the one that is based on strategic...
on greed.
...and resource manipulation to one that deals more with egalitarian and humanitarian values.
Right.
Now, in economic terms, those values are emerging through what the internet is all about. The mandate of the internet, Peter, is to democratize access to information and resources. And so what we're seeing, and you can describe this as an answer to all the problems that are going on in the world today, from the Arab Spring to the dysfunction in Washington, to the Occupy movement, and all these movements that are looking for better ways to do things are all a result of this democratization of information value system, or meme, if you will. That says you can no longer be corrupt. We have a thousand different sources of information informing the intelligence of the people, so you can no longer manipulate our views by just a two-party system.
I remember a couple of years ago when Paul Ryan was talking about his hero, Ayn Rand.
Yes.
And how we should all love Ayn Rand because she had it all figured out. And Alan Greenspan thought she had it all figured out. She was at his side, right?
Absolutely. She was right there at his side when he was appointed as the head of economic advisors for the I believe it was the Ford administration. You look at these values, and there's nothing wrong with what Paul Ryan views as the highest values that a culture can aspire to, but those values don't take into account that culture evolves. Ayn Rand was a symbol of the 50s and 60s.
Right.
And if you look at her personal history, her philosophy of objectivism was a result of her having grown in Russia, where it's diametrically opposite of a capitalist culture. And her views were entirely a reaction of that. And then from that, she put out her views on the world.
Right, and she was extremely selfish.
Quite a bit, yes. But they are the virtues who empower individualism and the highest of individual.
That's people. Another way to say it.
Well, then you move from those values and you realize that, not everybody has those same capacities or aspirations, and that if you empower individualism in a vacuum where you consider government to be the enemy, there's going to be a lot of predatory behavior on the behalf of those individuals. And really, Peter, this is what led to this financial crisis and its aftermath. It is empowerment of individuals and institutions who view government as the enemy and go about systemically making its institutions obsolete.
Right. Deregulating.
Absolutely. This is what happened. This is what started with the first Reagan administration. On his inaugural day, he declared the government to be the enemy of business and went ahead and systemically deregulated everything that existed. Every possible industry you can think of was deregulated by the Reagan administration. And you have a business community that looks at this and they say, are you kidding me? This is the kind of values we need to spread the capitalist system all throughout this country, which led to, just like I describe, every system goes through introduction, growth, maturity, and then decline phase. Well, at one point, government became so impotent that it couldn't see what business was doing. It couldn't see the financial innovation instruments that we created that almost brought the entire world to collapse in 2008.
Right. Well, I look at it in a tribal versus collective way, and I think capitalism is individualistic. It's also very tribal. And to me, tribal mentality is all about win-lose. And versus collective, which is about win-win.
It's true. The second level values, Peter. So those are the I should say the second tier values.
Yeah, goes way back.
So we're talking about what you just described are the seventh and eighth level of values, where it's not only win-win, but it's win-win-win.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, you know, the individual wins, the opponent wins, and the planet wins as well. And this is really where we're talking about a completely higher level of consciousness that looks at the health of the planet at its core value and starts planning from there.
And your book goes into a lot of detail about how that's starting to work and the leaders of that. And it's so beautiful to see that we can move out of this orange fifth level. It's interesting that the color orange is there, whereas the red level was an earlier level, which was very abusive and arrogant. And then we have an advanced level that has a lot of red in it, in the orange. And then we move from the orange into the blue. And yet the blue isn't enough.
And move the red to the blue, Peter.
To the green. I meant green.
Yes.
So we move from the orange to the green, and we can understand greener planet, the green movement. And yet that's not enough.
Right.
Can you explain why that's not enough?
Yeah. Well, you can, first of all, you can credit my dear friend and associate, Dr. Beck, for coming up with the color scheme. My wife keeps reminding me that I'm colorblind and I can't tell the difference between red and orange unless I see it written somewhere. But here's the green values, which is the sixth level system, are the values of egalitarianism and humanitarianism. What we're transitioning into now out of the orange system, the fifth level system of resource manipulation and strategic enterprise, we're transitioning into these values that the Europeans have been in for a few decades. The problem with that transition is that the sixth level system does not recognize hierarchy. It believes that egalitarian existence, that if you treat everybody equally, that is the ultimate utopian place of existence. In reality, you really can't treat everybody equally. You treat someone like the Taliban equally, and you're assured of destruction. And so you see these values being repeated in what I call the infant stages of the knowledge economy, the values of collaboration, of sharing, pretty much everything that defines this new knowledge economy. They're not enough because at one point you have to look out for the bottom line, and you have to recognize that not everybody is equal. But the sixth system is not capable of doing that, and that's why we really have to transition quickly to the seventh level system that is a functional system that sees all this and says, okay, well, I recognize how greedy the fifth level system is. I recognize the egalitarian values of the sixth level system, but I have to tell it that it has to see hierarchy. And I also recognize how dysfunctional the fourth level system is, which is the one that provides the regulatory institutions and structures. And also the third level system, which is the abusive, egocentric system think of the Tony Sopranos of the world in that system. And so the seventh level system recognizes the need. It has the big picture view that recognizes the need to plug the healthy expressions of these systems into what I call a functional platform that is going to define the next economic and political system.
All right, but let's go back a little bit. I want to look at the fourth level because there was a lot of hope for that. That had really nice regulations, and it had hierarchy, and it seemed like everybody could prosper in that system, and it went wrong.
Yeah. Well, it went wrong, Peter, because the strategic enterprise values that we've been with since the onset of that system, the focus has been on how to manipulate and numb the system for the sole purpose of improving the bottom line. So the emergence of the fourth level came as a result of the values before it.
The lack of values before it.
that's a good way to put it. The robber barons, the few men who built America and did it on the back of exploited labor and pretty much killed any competition. These were a combination of heroic and egocentric values that the law couldn't stop. There wasn't an infrastructure of law that stopped these people from doing whatever they wanted to do. So along comes the New Deal, which was a solution to the problems of existence from a previous level, and says, okay, we're going to have laws. There'll be no more monopolistic practices. We will have a system of institutions instead of a system of few powerful men that are going to determine what the values of this culture is. And so these values stayed with us from pretty much the middle of the Great Depression on to the mid-1970s when, with the Carter administration, government and culture began to realize that this overburdened structure of government is just killing business.
It created too much glue.
It created too many obsolete institutions it was becoming a burden on the innovation of the system. And in comes Ronald Reagan and says, okay, well, we're going to get rid of the entire system. That's not how it works.
Right.
You have a functional balance between the interest of business and the interest in protecting the consumer. And so, what the fifth level system did is work for three decades to manipulate the system that the New Deal values put in place, and it has done so successfully to the point where we really cannot regulate. You almost saw the collapse of the entire global economy in 2008, and up to the rescue came the Obama administration that was really ineffective in the face of a system that was in the middle of collapse.
Right, he wasn't strong enough.
Well, at this point, Peter, it's important to distinguish between an individual with certain value systems. Dr. Beck and I, at the time, the candidate for Senate, Barack Obama, was speaking. We both thought he was definitely a seventh level leader.
Yes.
You can have these qualities in an individual, but your effectiveness is how well you apply it to the existing system.
Right.
And if the existing system is in phase of collapse and decline, and your values are ahead of the system, the system is sure to fail, or the emergence is sure to fail.
Right. I see
so
that too.
President Obama was at least a decade, if not two decades, ahead of his time.
Yes.
Because we were just emerging to the values of the seventh level system, and he was a little early.
And he projects those values in so many ways, but it doesn't work in a system that needs more energy to speak the language of the system.
Right. And so someone, if President Obama was truly a seventh level leader, what he would have done is let the banking system collapse, and you would have seen a complete disappearance of the previous system that really has held culture and its institutions hostage for the last 20, 30 years. You'd have seen the organic emergence of other systems that are more distributed than the ones that are concentrated in too big to fail institutions. I really do believe that if the banks were allowed to fail, that the failure would not have been that severe. It is the belief of the current system, which is extremely weakened and incompetent, the current system that is in power, that is, Congress administration, be it the Bush administration or the inheritors of the Bush administration, the Obama administration, purely incompetent in knowing what the internal dynamics of the banking system were. And if it were allowed to fail, if someone had the courage to allow it to fail, very little of what they said will happen would have happened. The government would have had the opportunity to exert its power and existence. It was in a driving position to say, okay, we're going to redesign the entire banking system, and I would start with putting in facilities for lending specifically right immediately after the crash, to install facilities that are specifically designed to lend in every branch of every bank, to lend specifically for small business owners, to lend specifically for home buyers. And so the entire system would have reorganized around these new values, but unfortunately government wasn't there. Government was not that, what I call the smart government in my book, that needs to come out of its sleep phase and wake up and realize that it needs to regulate.
Yeah, it was still in that Reagan era.
Yes.
Where it just isn't watching enough, isn't smart enough.
Well, you know, I call Paul Volcker as a seventh level leader that was desperately needed, and definitely President-elect Obama had him as the head of the Chicago group at the time, analyzing what the system needed, and unfortunately he was sidelined as someone who creates a threat for the existence
for the fifth,
of the current system
for the fifth
and
level.
Done away with. See, right. He's someone who saw down the functional flow of an economy 20, 30 years down the line, and he saw that this derivatives and algorithm stuff that is valued at $750 trillion, that just a sideline of what a real economy is. What a distributed, diverse economy should look like. That this thing called financial innovation that got involved in betting games and had nothing to do with productive output was just a sideline to the economy, and that it really needed to come to an end as soon as possible. So he saw the functionality of the economy 20 to 30 years down the line and said, okay, we need to re-regulate banks. We need to separate investment banks from commercial banks. And, you know, the minute President Obama took office, Paul Volcker was sidelined for Larry Summers, who's the poster child of the financial crisis, who's the poster child for this whole thing, financial innovation and derivatives.
It's amazing that Obama did that. And we're starting to run out of time. There's so much more to say. I don't know if you'd be willing to come back again and talk more about where we're headed and how we're going to do it. And you know, you've certainly hinted at it and made suggestions about it. But I know there's so much that you can tell us about what it takes and what we've been, and how we've gone wrong in a way that we can now go right. And,
sure.
And would you be willing to do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good.
Peter, we can do it now if you'd like, if you have the time.
No, actually, I I'm in a studio. I only have a certain time, but we can maybe next week we can book some studio time and do it again.
Okay. Yeah. I'm busy from Thursday on, so any time before Thursday will be fine.
Oh, we'll talk because really would like to talk more about this with you. It's fascinating, and it really helps the public understand why and now what and how.
Absolutely. So
thank
yeah,
you.
You can either call me back at this number or email me or wherever you want to do
right.
It, Peter. I'd love to talk to you again.
Oh, thank you so much. So I'm speaking with Saeed Dalabani, and the book is Mememonomics, M-E-M-E-nomics. And you, is it in the bookstores now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
That's great, because I had an earlier proof of it, of the book. So thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter. It's wonderful to be with you.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org or 212-222-7748. And thank you so much for listening.